Blog Talk Radio. Host Merle Exit. Let's see. I'm here in New York City, and 7 o'clock on my time, and the weather outside is frightful. It sucks so bad. I guess it could be worse. You know, it always could be worse, but it's like rainy and cold, but not, you know, disgustingly cold, but you know, rainy and bleh, and, you know, good to be inside, not outside. And so since I get to broadcast inside, I'll tell you what's going on with this particular show. Well, all right. Catch a piece of Maine by owning your own lobster trap. That's right. You can actually buy, excuse me, I meant to fart. I'll tell you why in a minute. You can own your own lobster trap. And so the captains John and Brendan from Maine are going to be calling in to talk to us about how you can own your own lobster trap. And, I'll be chowing down, having the lobster meal. But, man, I couldn't resist. I got two 1.5-pound lobsters. I got a pound of steamers and a pound of mussels and two desserts. Desserts called, what were they called? Well, anyway, a whoopie pie. Yeah. Okay, but so what happened was that I had to try it. I figured so I had the clams, the steamers, and one of the lobsters. And about half, three quarters of this whoopie pie. This is so good. Anyway, so that's who we'll have on first to talk about what this is all about. And we're going to talk about how to eat a lobster. How do you eat lobster to get the best of it? And I'm going to ask a bunch of questions about lobsters, too. Now, with a little luck, Hyannis Port and the presidency of JFK. Well, originally, Rob Sennett, the co-producer of this movie, was going to call in, but he's got something to do. I don't understand why anybody can do something better than calling into the radio show. We might have somebody from Cape Cod or Hyannis Tourism calling in, because we're talking about Hyannis versus Hyannis. Also regarding this movie. And then Michelle Crystal, she's the executive director of In the Life, the TV, and she's going to call because we're going to talk about LGBT community. I get that, lesbian, bisexual guy, okay, is portrayed, and what are their chances against having anti-gay groups with that have tons of money? And then what we're discussing is the that thing in California, you know, that thing, the Proposition 8. Yeah, that's the one, Proposition 8. And I'm going to break for a quick commercial of my favorite brownies here, and then we'll get right to the show. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale. Ah, yes, and you can get that at brownies.com, as well as the wonderful brownies that are enrobed in dark chocolate. So, right now, let's see. Okay, so I'm not sure. Do I got the both of you guys on the air, or just one of you? Or who do I got? Hey,
is this Merle?
This is Merle.
Hey, Merle, it's Captain John here from Catch a Piece of Maine. How are you?
Oh, just fine. I was just telling everybody. Originally, I was going to be eating the lobster while we were talking.
Yeah.
But I started looking at all the stuff there, and I said, I really should cook this up before. And
yep.
Then I'll eat the lobster while we're talking.
All right, then, that works.
Well, except that I did that, and then I tasted the lobster.
Yeah.
I said, I'm eating it.
You did what I do. You take a little nibble and you decide you want to eat the rest of it.
Oh, my God.
They are delicious little critters, aren't they?
I can't believe. I mean, it's not because I got. I have to tell you, it's like, okay, yeah, let's see. And here's this instructions with the sea salt, and yeah, it'll be sweet. Uh-huh. Okay. I'm telling. This is like unbelievable.
Well, thank you, Merle. Know what it is? It's because we have our own lobstermen go out privately and go catch these lobsters just for our customers. And specifically, those lobsters that you're eating today were harvested yesterday from these cold waters of Maine. And it's just, they're such delicious, especially this time of year, the water's so cold. They're extra sweet. I had one last night, and I ate just about the whole thing. It was just fantastic.
Before we get into the whole delicious part about it, because I have a bunch of questions that I'll ask.
Okay. Yep.
First thing I want to discuss is this whole thing. What is Catch a Piece of Maine?
Yep. Okay.
Go ahead. Tell us.
You want to start with what is Catch a Piece of Maine?
Tell us. What's it all about?
Gotcha. Really, what Catch a Piece of Maine is, it's a program where we're connecting end consumers to the harvesters here in Maine, and you can have your private lobsterman catch lobsters just for you and then ship your product anywhere in the country. And through our program, people can either buy a lobster trap, which is kind of our most elite program, and it's very extremely interactive. You can actually see where your fisherman's catching it, how many he's catching out of your personal trap, and then have all those lobsters shipped to whoever you want anywhere in the country. You could do it for gifts, for holiday parties, just about anything you can imagine. It is fantastic. The other option, too, through Catch a Piece of Maine, we have other programs starting at less than $150 where people can have lobsters directly from their lobstermen shipped anywhere. So they're lower price points, and it's absolutely perfect for the gifting season. That's where most of our customers are just getting just a great kick out of it. It's a fantastic program.
Well, okay. So now, why are you doing this? I mean, like, to own your own lobster. And you said I could see, like, how many lobsters have been caught?
Yeah, for instance, Merle, I could be your personal lobsterman.
Right.
In many cases, I have a lot of customers throughout the country, and they count on me to catch their lobsters for an entire year. They'll have parties when they have people over, and they're looking to impress them. In a lot of cases, they just want the freshest, the most elite seafood live lobster that they're going to get. And they know from their Captain John here, they trust me, and they realize that I'm going to go out and work their trap for them and catch them the best lobsters they're ever going to have. And that's the feedback I'm getting back from a lot of these people who are partnering up with us at Catch a Piece of Maine.
Now, the first thing that would come to my mind is, like, do you have, like, that many lobsters in Maine that you could do this?
Absolutely. The Maine lobster industry is a sustainable resource. We have a very, very good we have a good stock of lobster. Actually, this year, our landings are going to increase dramatically. It should be a record high year. I'm anticipating it being about 10 to 15% higher than last year. So we have an industry that we manage very, very well. The fishermen take pride in their businesses, in their operation. And again, I think the model of the whole thing is we're really looking for tomorrow instead of today. We manage our industry in a manner where in years to come, hopefully our kids and grandkids will be able to do the same thing that we're doing in harvesting the sea. So we're very proud of our industry.
Okay, so let's just say that I decide I want to do this. What? Give me the whole rundown. What is?
Sure. If you wanted to, be part of the Catch a Piece of Maine program and actually have the elite trap membership, which you'd own a lobster trap for the entire year, it would consist of an investment of less than $3,000, $2,995. You'd be guaranteed, this is a minimum, 52 pound and a half hard shell lobsters. With every single shipment that we send out, we send them in increments of four. So four pound and a half hard shell lobsters, a pound of mussels, a pound of steamers, Maine-made desserts, a welcome letter, DVD of the fisherman fishing your trap. You get the picks and the bibs and directions how to do it. And most importantly, guess what? You get a phone call from me every time you get a shipment ensuring that everything went well. So it's kind of that personal touch at the end of the day.
Cool.
This is kind of the over-the-top membership that's, if you have everything, you don't have this. And most people, this is what they're looking for. It's absolutely fantastic. It's extremely, the other thing I didn't mention, it's extremely interactive. We give our customers a password to our site, and they can actually check their trap's performance. So on a weekly basis.
Really?
Yeah, they can actually go online and see actually how their harvester did. So, for instance, 2 days ago I went out. It's blowing really hard right now. We have a northeaster here. I went out. I did quite well. And in one of my traps, I had four lobsters out of one of them. So out of that trap, it was number, I think, 63. It was one of my clients in California. They checked their site that night, and they called me up. They said, oh, my goodness, my trap caught four lobsters. I can't believe this. That was just kind of over the top. They really followed it, and it made their holiday season. It was real because I'm out there fishing the trap just for them. They loved it.
That's great because, like, what occurred to me is, like, well, how do I know how much it really catches?
Right. Know what else, Merle, that I forgot to tell you? You're going to die when you hear this. We have cameras in our lobster traps. You can actually see, honestly, the lobsters crawling in the traps. We do this, again, for our elite partnership, the Catch a Piece of Maine Trap Owners. But if you check out our website at www.catchapieceofmaine.com, we're going to have a link up in the next few days. And you're going to be able to actually, we're going to show everyone. It's been very private just for our trap owners. We're going to share it just to give people a glimpse of what we're doing. You can actually watch the lobsters crawl in the trap. And obviously we'll haul the trap later on, but it's just, it shows how real it really is.
Wow, now that's certainly reality TV, huh?
you got it.
but then I guess you could also see, I know, like, I went on a lobster boat when I was in Provincetown.
Yeah.
That was interesting, and you also get to see the other things that the trap catches.
You're so right, and in one of these videos that we're putting up, in the back of the trap, you'll see maybe after an hour, again, we speed through the images, but after about an hour, you'll see a bunch of fish swimming by. You see crabs crawling in, starfish. It's amazing to see. And again, I've been around the water my whole life. It's amazing even for me to see what actually goes on down below the surface.
Wow.
You know, when we drop the traps. It's fascinating. I would really encourage you to take a peek. www.catchapieceofmaine.com.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that. So, and now let's say what happens when you catch. I mean, do you catch like crabs, edible crabs?
We do actually. We do a lot of times. What we do on our website, again, this is for other consumers who we found that there's so many people who want to be part of our program, but may not be able to afford that $3,000. We have other items similar to what you're talking about. We have crabs that crawl in the trap. We have we sell lobster meat. We have a bunch of other items that we sell there at lower price points. But a lot of it is it's kind of the way that we fish our industry. It's a very eco-friendly method where when things crawl in the trap, you're not killing them. You're letting them go. In a lot of cases,
right.
When you do have crabs, if it's of legal size, you can keep it. And then, again, we pass it along to our customers.
Oh, okay. So that I was curious about that because, you know, I had noticed when I had gone out to do this that, you know, everything was being tossed back
right.
because there wasn't anything that, you know, was
yeah. Of
size or edible or whatever. But it was interesting
right. To
see.
Yeah,
know, what
it
goes in there.
It is. It's fun. It's a lot. It's a very entertaining.
I mean, would you actually a fish go in there?
Oh, goodness, yes. Goodness, yes. But again, you'd never know it unless you saw some of this footage. Again, we've spent...
Really? I mean,
we've
like,
spent, yep.
what kind of fish? I mean,
We've had, in the video that I have here, we have codfish swimming in. We have mackerel. We have a bunch of other ground fish, like flatfish crawl, swim in. And it's amazing. It all depends on the type of bottom that the ocean's made up of where the traps are set. And the one thing that was just absolutely incredible I have never seen in my life, we put a night video and a smelt. It was near like a freshwater like tributary. A smelt swam in, and you would never believe it, but the scales were so shiny, our light caught it when it came by.
Wow.
It's one of the most incredible things I've seen in going to trap, and I never even knew they went in it.
Wow. But when the fish that go in, they swim in and they swim out, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah,
we don't No, whatever goes in the trap escapes live. We very seldomly ever have fish come in the trap and get trapped for a long period of time. Occasionally
right.
it will happen, but you pick them up, you throw them back over, and they swim away. It's very eco-friendly.
Mm, that's great. So now let's say, I'm just curious, what are the other programs, let's say?
Sure. Let's say that we have a lot of people who would like to be part of the program, but for one reason or another don't want to cook the lobster. Again, lobster sometimes, if you're having a big party, it's more convenient sometimes to do what we have, our frozen lobster tails and fresh-picked lobster meat. This is a fantastic program. We're having, for two lobster tails, we have a special going on right now. You can have two lobster tails shipped anywhere in the country with other goodies that are included, the desserts, for less than $75. It's a really, really fantastic program. And again, it's great because you don't have to go through all the cooking. We
mm-hmm.
have a share program, which consists of it's a fraction of the trap. It's a one-time purchase of 4 pound-and-a-half hard shell lobsters, the pound of steamers, a pound of mussels, the main made dessert, the welcome letter, everything that goes along with it for $249. Again, I think the most important thing here is shipping's included anywhere in the country. It's absolutely perfect. So it's kind of that over the top gift that you can really say thank you or,
right.
you know, happy holidays or whatever else. And a lot of people, what I'm finding, are choosing this for the holiday season, for dinner parties or whatever else. It's great.
Well, I think that in case people are kind of wondering, they're thinking, well, that's a, you know, pretty pricey for that. Well, I just want to attest to the fact that how delicious it is. I've eaten lobster, and, you know, sometimes you can have lobster, and you don't know how it's going to turn out when you go into a restaurant or whether, you know, you get it yourself. You're not sure how tasty it'll be, you know?
Right.
But in getting both the quality and the taste that you want is what's important. That's what you're paying for, you
right.
know? So I just want to, you know, I had the steamers, and by the way, like I was looking at the in terms of how to cook them. Now the steamers, just so people can understand, clams and steamers are like different.
Correct. The steamers are what we call the steamers. It's like a soft shell clam. It's very tender. It takes about 2 minutes to cook. Very, very delicate. So when we go through our shipping of even that, we pack them with care because, again, it's not like a hard shell clam that you could just kind of throw around. It's very delicate, but it's very sweet. Did you get a chance to try it, Merle?
Yeah, I ate them already.
Oh, boy.
That was the first thing I had. I said, all right, let me try the steamers. Or I call them the clams with the condoms on them.
Yeah, yes, those are them.
Yeah.
Those are them. Well, they're very tasty, though.
Yeah, I assume, by the way, that you have to take that off before you eat it.
I know. Well, you know what, Merle? That's funny. I should have told you this. I dug those clams for you. And my brother was with me the other day when we did it. But I'm telling you, I got in my hip boots. I got out in the mud, and I dug those for you. So.
Oh, that's so great.
The end of it, I was a little dirty, but I tell you what, that's what we do whatever we need to for our customers at Catch Piece of Maine.
I love it. But now, when you dig for clams, in other words, when you're digging for clams, it's the steamers you get as opposed to the hard shell clams. So you're going to dig and find hard shell clams as well?
You can. A lot of the people, they drag for them. I mean, they do it with like a big net in the back of the boat.
Uh-huh.
With the steamer clams, what we do, we go to the mud flats, and it's obviously you got to wait for the tide to go out.
Right.
And we have a bunch of different diggers who will go for us. I wanted to get you those myself. That's why I did it. My brother actually videoed it. I may have to send you it, Merle.
Oh, yeah, please do that. Yes.
You'll get a kick out of me. I was filthy. I was absolutely filthy. I was up to my boots filled up with water. But you know what? Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But basically, to make a long story short, you dig about maybe a foot into the soil, which is, you know, obviously covered by water when the tides come in. And you can see, because usually the steamers will, like, spray water up in the air out of the holes where they live.
Right.
So you'll walk around and you'll step around, and when you see water come up, you'll know that's where they are. And then you'll dig down, you can grab them right out, you clean them off, and you put them in water to purge themselves out, to clean out, and that's what I did for you.
Right. So in other words, when like I had a friend who lived in near the shore, in near Boston, and she would say to me that, you know, I just went out and dug for clams.
Right. No, that's really how it works.
And so when people are doing that, when they're digging for clams, it's the steamers that they usually get when they're digging for clams.
Yeah. I mean, you can. There's what they call quahogs. It's like a hard shell clam.
Right.
To the southern of Maine, in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, Cape Cod area, they will. A lot of people, you can actually wade out in the water. My brother did it a few years ago in Cape Cod, and you feel around with your feet. Like if you go up to your waist, you feel around your feet, and you can feel them because again, it's the size of like maybe a softball, and they're hard, and you can dig them out like that. The only way you can get these steamers, what I'm talking about, you have to go at a low tide, and you have to dig, about a foot down. You actually have to get it's almost like a rake, and you rake the things up.
Right. Now, and by the way, so steamers, when places have fried clams, it's steamers that they're using, aren't they?
Correct. Yes.
So that's why, like, you have either the bodies or the tails? Is that if you kind of like want to classify it?
Yeah, that's probably a good way to classify it. You're right.
Yeah.
Exactly what they are.
So this way people will know what, you know, what the with that.
Yeah.
I haven't made the mussels yet before I get into the whole thing about lobsters. I haven't made the mussels yet. But with the mussels, are they cultivated mussels?
Yeah, they're rope-grown mussels. They're harvested here in Maine on lines, and the best way that they do that, it's they grow them on these lines and vertical lines that go up to the surface. And the reason they do it is because you don't have all the grit and other material inside the mussels when you actually cook them.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very sustainable resource the way that we harvest it, and it's a relatively quick process. I just started learning about the whole rope-grown mussels, and I tried some maybe a year ago, rope-grown compared to growing them on the bottom. And the rope-grown ones were much sweeter, much tender, much more tender, and didn't have any grit. You'll notice when you eat these, there's not going to be any sand or pebbles inside of it, which occasionally does happen when you're harvesting something on the rocks on the bottom.
So, in other words, with these, with the steamers, it said to like soak them in salt water to get out the grit.
Right. Yeah.
Which I did.
Perfect. So, we do it for you before we send it, but we always encourage all of our customers to do it one more time. Again, I'm just a very, very picky seafood eater, and if I'm going to eat something, I like it to be the best, so I'm trying to make sure that for our customers it's the same
right.
way.
Sometimes now, with the mussels, with the mussels, you don't think I don't have to do that in that recipe.
Well, I mean, if you have a minute, you may want to just throw them in just literally for 2, 3, 4 minutes.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you don't remember, it's not the end of the world. But again, I'm a very picky seafood eater, and I usually go overboard.
Okay, I was just kind of wondering about that. Now let's get over to the lobster. Is there a difference between getting a male or a female lobster in terms of taste or anything?
No, not really. I mean, to be honest with you, what I found that the male lobsters have larger claws. The female lobsters have wider tails. There's really not that much of a difference, to be honest with you. They're both. You know, I have no preference, to be honest with you. I ate a lot of lobster.
Right.
The one difference there is, which I should mention, there's a difference when you're classifying lobster between hard shell and soft shell. Soft shell lobsters don't have as much meat, but are very tender. The lobsters we sent you are hard shell. They're probably a pound and a half hard shell lobsters are probably the highest lobster on demand on the market. It's almost probably the perfect size lobster for one person to eat with like the mussels and the steamers,
right.
And it's my favorite. If I had to give lobsters to someone, I'd give them pound and a half lobsters, hard
now,
shell.
Now, what if my lobster trap caught a 2-pound lobster? Would I get that?
With our trap owners,
yeah.
it's extremely personalized and it's completely service oriented. If our customers want that 2-pound lobster, guess what? They get it. A lot of cases, I have one trap owner, which that's all that they want out of their trap. They said, listen, you know, I like the little ones, but I'd rather just have these big ones. What I've done, I've created a custom program for them. So regardless what their trap catches, whenever it catches the bigger lobsters, I send it out immediately. When it catches the smaller ones, I use it almost as a bank. I'll, like, trade in the smaller ones for bigger ones and send them just, like, the 2 to 2.5 pounders, and they love it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because I was kind of wondering about that. What about if my lobster trap caught a call, I mean?
A call?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We won't. If our customers say, listen, I want exactly what my trap catches, whatever lobster it is, yes, we'll send it to them. In most cases, it's all about what's the best appearance and what's the best for them. So in most cases, we'll only send pound and a half hard shells,
okay.
If that makes sense. So even when their trap does catch a 1-pounder or a cull or a very soft lobster, I'm only going to send them the best because, again, that's just basically what they're asking for. I have one customer who wants the exact lobster, every exact lobster out of their trap, and we send them in smaller increments of like 2 or 3 lobsters at a time, and that's just what they're looking for. So it's completely customized to the customer and what they want.
Right. But now let's say if you're catching a cull, how, like, the cull can be as large as 3-4 pounds. I mean, a 3 or 4 pounder, can it? I mean,
right.
Because
yep.
The cull is missing the leg, but it's the size of a larger lobster.
Correct. I will send that to them if that's what they request. Again,
I want people to understand when they buy a cull, because when they buy a cull, because I don't think people realize when you're buying, going to like a fish market,
right?
And you're buying a cull, it costs less per pound.
Very, very good, Merle. Yep.
But
you're right.
But you have to understand you're also getting let's say if it weighed 2.5 pounds, you're getting a 3-pounder. And you're getting the tail of a 3-pounder.
Right.
So it's making up for the claw that it doesn't have.
Right.
Plus it's less price. Just because it's not as pretty.
You make a really good point too for anyone viewing. There is when we're talking about culls, we're talking about a one claw lobster. I think it's really really nice that you made that distinction between it. So when you do go to a seafood market, a lot of times you'll pay less for the one claw lobster, not because it's a lesser quality lobster, just simply because it doesn't have both claws. For our customers at Catch Piece of Maine, for the most part, we give them all two clawed lobsters because, again, that's what they're asking for.
Right.
But, you know, regardless, if someone's listening out there and they're saying, geez, I just want one claws, well, I guess what? Give Captain John a call, and I'll set you up with some one clawed lobsters here at Catch Piece of Maine.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, it boils down to that there's an abundance of lobsters in Maine, enough so that you can buy your own lobster trap and not go out there and put one there.
Right. The lobster trap, what we have at Catch Piece of Maine, we're trying to make that connection. We're trying to make people, we're trying to bring them closer to the source. And the way that we do that is through the personalized emails that we send, by the DVDs that we send out, that the personalized phone calls we make to our customers at night. On top of that, only the best lobsters shipped overnight anywhere in the country to our customers. So it's extremely overboard, over the top, and it's as much as our customer wants. It's what they get.
Wow, that's great. Now I just want to go in a little bit into about eating a lobster.
Okay.
By the way.
And Merle, we've already eaten the lobster, so we better backtrack a little bit, shouldn't we?
Yeah, well, I have to, just so people know, or so you'll know where I'm at regarding the lobster,
yep.
It's not one iota of meat that was thrown at. So,
sounds like I got hold of that one.
So you know how I eat a lobster. Because people tend to, you know, like, just give me the tail and the claws and the knuckles, and, you know, that's all I want. And it's like,
I'm the same way. When I was growing up, that's all I used to eat was just the claws. And then I started eating the tail. I think my favorite part of the lobster now is actually the body meat. And I think it's probably the sweetest and the tenderest part. It's harder to get out. It's a little more work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, that's what I like in the lobster. That's my favorite part.
And the little legs.
And the little legs, yes. They're so sweet. I love them. We're going to have another lobster party, Merle. I think that's all there is to it.
Oh, I guess we will. But I have to tell you, one of the things, because I really like, I learned so much about eating a lobster that I want people to also realize, when you're eating a lobster tail, you don't necessarily need a nutcracker.
Correct.
A lobster tail. And I'll tell you, this is what I learned. You go to the back of the lobster, of the tail, and with your hands, you crack it.
That's exactly what I do, too.
You crack it, and then you turn it over, and then you could push open the side.
Right.
And then get it right out.
I do the same thing. You kind of twist it, too, at the same time, and all that meat will come right out. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I think we prepare our lobster the same way. I like it.
And I have to tell you, the thing with the sea salt, that's the first time I did this with sea salt. I usually steam lobsters and shrimp and any shellfish in beer.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, that's a good way to do it, too. Know what you should try with your mussels, if you haven't done it yet, is in white wine and garlic. That's absolutely fantastic.
That's why I didn't make that, because I got that you can like put the lobsters, clams, and everything in one pot. I said, well, it kind of like the whole thing, like when you have the steamers, is part
right.
of it is dipping into the juice.
Right. Right.
That adds to that taste of it. You know, so that's a whole separate taste.
Exactly.
Than what you're getting from a lobster. And then the same thing with the mussels. It's mussels, you can be more creative with mussels in terms of what you're cooking it in.
Exactly. You
know? So that's why I kind of, I think I'm probably going to like maybe some wine and chop up some like tomatoes, you know, stuff like that, and cook it in that. Yeah.
That sounds really good. That sounds
yeah.
really good. You're making me hungry.
So now, so you go out like every day and to the lobster trap?
Yeah. This time of year, like today, I'm looking out the window right now, and we have a what they call a northeaster. It's a classic northeast breeze. It's really, really brisk, and the seas are really rough. So I won't get out I'll get out Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But the seas are very, very, very big right now. This time of year, it's extremely, the weather's very unpredictable. So whenever the weather's nice, usually I get out 3 or 4 times a week. And then the rest of the week, obviously, the weather won't allow us due to the big seas and the snow
right.
and the wind and so on. But, yeah, that's usually what happens. The last time we went out 2 days ago, and I got pictures of this too, it was about 18 degrees when we went out, and our whole deck of the boat was just ice because when we were going out through the harbor, the waves would hit it and turn to slush and ice on the boat. It was just it was quite a sight. This time of year in Maine, there's a lot goes into the lobstering. It's very dangerous. You got to be careful, but at the same time, it's very rewarding when you're hauling one of those traps. And like I said, you catch 4 lobsters out of it. Very nice.
Yeah. So in other words, you can like what's the most amount of time, let's say, that you like in between that you've gone to a lobster trap? I mean, can you like wait a whole week?
Oh, yeah. It depends on the different lobsterman's strategy. What some people do, they will bait the trap. And when I say bait it, I'm talking about putting fish in it for food. It's like
mm-hmm.
a herring or a whitefish. You'll put it in, the lobster will be attracted to it. It'll crawl in the trap. What some people do, they'll bait the traps very, very heavy. They'll put a lot of fish in it, and they'll let it soak for a long period, up to a week. And their strategy is let it sit on the bottom. Hopefully not just one lobster comes in, but hopefully like 3 or 4. Other people, other lobstermen, have a different strategy. Their strategy is put a little amount of bait in and haul it every time they possibly can. So in other words, try to haul it every night or every couple nights and maybe catch one lobster out of it. So I think a lot has to do with your strategy. My strategy right this time of year is put a lot of bait in the trap. If I can get out frequently, I can get out. If not, I know that the bait is still working and the lobsters will still be attracted and come in the trap. I like to get out 3 times, you know, 3 times a week anyways.
Right. Wow. That's really... How long have you been doing this, by the way?
Oh, boy. When my brother and I were 7 and 8 years old, our uncle was a commercial lobsterman. That's when we first got into it. And I'm now 28, and he's 26, I guess. So we've been at it for quite some time.
Wow.
We have it's in your blood, and, you know, it's kind of that whole passion thing that it's something that we love to do, and... You know, really just like sharing it with others, and that's why we started this company, Catch a Piece of Maine.
Yeah, that's cool. And I was looking at the DVD, the BVDs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I see that, you know, you got that people look out for each other kind of thing.
Exactly. It's an industry where it's a very close-knit community where people do. They look after each other, and again, When you're thinking how dangerous it actually can be out there, it's nice knowing that there's other people out there, other lobstermen, who are competing against you, trying to catch more lobsters out of their trap than yours. But at the same time, if you're in a pinch, they're going to come in, they're going to help you. It's a nice feeling.
I need you to, like, I'm gonna put on a commercial because somebody's trying. People don't really get that they can't call me on my phone. You know, so
yeah.
Hang on while I break
yep.
for commercial and find out who the heck is calling me. Okay, I'll be right
you
back.
You got it. Yeah.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra legroom as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of legroom.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Oh, isn't that a cute commercial, by the way?
I know. That's what I was just listening to. I love it.
I know. I have to. I'm trying to get a hold of JetBlue to see if they have any more like that. But I was right. I have. I'm having somebody from Hyannis calling in, and you know they're calling my home phone, and I'm going, okay. I try to give instructions, but that's okay. The guy's going to be calling in a little while.
All right. Well, I can. I don't want to keep you all night. I know. I know this is.
No, when he calls in, I'll let.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were talking about because I want people. Oh yeah. And the other thing is in terms of eating the roe and eating the tamale.
Tamale. Yep.
Okay. Yes.
The roe.
No,
First of all, the roe's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a delicacy. Actually, we have certain people who will ask specifically just for the roe. So when we're cooking and processing fresh picked lobster meat, we'll save the roe just for them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I personally am not the biggest fan. I like tamale, to be honest
mm-hmm.
with you. I'm not big into the roe though. My mother loves it. My mother absolutely loves it. We actually bring her some quite frequently, but. The tamale, on the other hand, I know that there was something that went out this summer saying that there was high amounts of toxins in the tamale, and the truth of the matter is there isn't at all. It's perfectly safe to eat.
Right.
So tamale is fantastic. A lot of people will take it and make it into stocks and stuff like that. It's fantastic, especially if the whole body of the lobster.
Right.
That's another thing you can do, too, just so you can use every single bit of it. Oh, it's great.
All right. I'm going to have you on in another time. I want to continue talking all about, you know, eating shellfish and, you know, and stuff like that. Because this is really cool. Because I want to, you know, get back to you and tell you and talk about, like, going to that I've gone to the site and what I've seen. And, of course, I'll be writing about this stuff also. Right,
awesome.
This is so great. So you're gonna be my lobster man to talk to, huh?
I'm gonna be your private lobster man. And again, whatever you need from me, you just give me a holler. I'll take care of you.
Okay, great.
Alrighty.
It was so fabulous talking with you. And again, I'll have you back. And you know, anybody, I'll ask if people have any questions. People will email me and I'll let you know what they're asking. Okay.
Fantastic.
This is so cool.
Oh,
right, thanks so
girl.
Much.
Take care.
Okay, have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. That was really good. Well, from Maine, we're now going to go to Hyannis. Let's see.
Oops. Good evening, Mel.
Oh, hello. Okay. I know
here.
What. See, what happened is, I know what happened. See, they said to call me, which is, you know, someone to call me.
Mm-hmm.
But then what was going on was that I had already, like, it didn't get passed down to you that if you were calling, you were supposed to call me before the show.
Oh, she didn't say that. She said
and
call at 7:30, so that's right.
Yeah, right. So that, and
yeah.
I, although I did explain, but it's okay. Thank God I have call waiting, because I'm going, somebody's trying to call me instead of calling in, and okay, so I just,
mm-hmm.
anyway, so, okay, and I'm sorry, and you, again, your name is?
My name is Howard Penn, P-E-N-N.
Mm-hmm, and?
Howard, yeah.
What's your position?
I'm a retailer in Hyannis, Massachusetts, and I've known the Kennedys for many years.
Oh, cool. The first thing I wanted to talk about is, now, were you part of getting this movie done?
Yes, I was. I was. My name is Howard Penn again, and I was in the movie explaining about taking care of Mrs. Rose Kennedy
okay. Well, I'll go back and look at the movie, and I'll say, this is look, star. I know a star.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me about, tell everybody what this, I saw it, so you could tell everybody what this movie was about and also why was this done.
Well, we have a museum right in Hyannis, the JFK Museum, which I believe you saw and attended, and you got the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
We as an organization has produced a story of JFK in his days of politics till he passed away, and it's just a phenomenal 49-minute presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It tells a story of who Jack was and his livelihood and how we grew up on Cape Cod and how wonderful man he was, and needless to say it's been history and has passed on throughout the many years that we have had association with him.
So this is about his, not his whole life. I mean, it's his adult life.
His adult life, yes.
Right. And the rest of the family as well.
Yeah. I understand you did get a DVD. I don't know if you saw it yet.
Oh, yeah, I did. I watched it. Have it clear that this what it was about. As a matter of fact, I recognized the Kennedy compound because when I was there, we kind of like went over nearby to look
mm-hmm.
at the Kennedy compound.
Right.
But it was quite interesting because it
was a lot of history there.
Yeah.
I guess we're pretty proud because the family's always been very very strong and influential on the Cape with Nessie for JFK and Bobby and Ted, and it's just a great compound and they're very loving people throughout the community. There's always something going on out in the water, you might say, and sailing, always being with people, being with the children, being with the family, being with friends all the time.
Yeah, it's heartwarming. The
yes,
movie is,
yes,
it is. It's and I have to say what was interesting to was watching, like, because I'm looking at now at Caroline, who might wind up being a senator.
Well, I think it's just wonderful that Caroline is really considering of being the senator in New York State. It's just a very, very traditional thing to happen. Her uncle was a senator in New York, and now God comes to Caroline, which is a fine lady, and her children have grown, and the desire of the family, including our Senator Ted, that she should take over as senator.
Yeah, I think. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this whole thing.
Right.
But I also want to get a little into like what else there is for people to see in Hyannis.
Well, we're very grateful of what Hyannis is. It's a great port. It's a seaport. It's a great sailing area. It's a fishing area. Needless to say, it's a seasonal situation. We're 22 miles away from Nantucket, 21 miles away from Martha's Vineyard, and it's just a great area of Massachusetts.
And what other attractions are there?
Well,
aside from the Kennedy,
besides the compound, you got.
Yeah.
Other
than like, so if just in case you say, well, I'm not into John F. Kennedy, what else is there for me to see or see?
Well, there's other museums available. There's other locations on Cape Cod where you can travel to for museums, art studios, etc. All the way down to Flowerstown. I mean, you got to.
No, I know, but in terms of in Hyannis itself.
Oh, Hyannis itself.
Mm-hmm.
We really have the main thing would be. With the lot of studios per se of art, and the JFK Museum, we have a skating rink that's we have designed and opening that this fall, and it's just mostly a area where you can relax, play golf. There's tons of golf courses. In the Hyannis area, many golfers come here to play. It's also a relaxed area of hotels that have conventions here, and they come to the Hyannis.
Can you actually, let's say, get let's call it a tour of going to where Kennedy went, the Kennedys went?
You can go by the compound. There's no such thing as a tour per se. It's mapped out where Hyannis Port is, and you can ride by the JFK's house. It's right there in the compound area. And but if having an organized tour, there's none. No.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. By the way, I ate at the Naked Oyster.
Very good restaurant.
I have to get some information from them regarding some project that they do, which sounds interesting. But anyway, so to get back to this, so have you when you say you've met them? I mean, have you met them? Were you able to,
they have been customers in my stores for many years, and that's how I met the Kennedy family through my business. And then of course out sailing, JFK was rich. He sailed in the Hyannis Port Yacht Club, and he had his senior, and he used to sail in races. Of Hyannis.
Is that the yacht club where they have the Fugawi race?
No, that's called the Hyannis Yacht Club, the Fugawi race.
Uh-huh.
I'm past chairman of the Fugawi race. I didn't realize you knew Fugawi. Well, now that you know Fugawi, needless to say, I can tell you that the son of the Kennedy has participated in the sailboat race, and he has won a few times.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he came in second last summer on the return from Nantucket last Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, great! So now, have you lived in Hyannis like your whole life, kind of thing, or?
I'm from Plymouth originally, and I've lived in Hyannis since I've been down here since 1948.
Mm. You know, I have to tell you, it was interesting. I've been staying up late watching these old, really old panel quiz shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one of them is What's My Line? And
right.
It was funny because they kind of remember who was on, and then John Charles Daly was commenting about, saying something about Jack, which and I don't even think he said anything about presidency, but it was interesting to see that, thinking ahead, would you ever think that this guy that you met would become the president of the United States, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting to see that happen. But I guess I guess the legacy will continue with Caroline and
Well, I think she's certainly Caroline is a fine lady and a great mother and brother for children and she really like her mother. I mean, Jacqueline was also a proud lady and her children came first and that's how the family, you know, and Jack, I mean, that's how they were. They were very, very close and just to say they did come up with two fine children.
Mm.
I mean, you can shake hands with John Jr. and the strength in his hand when he would shake my hand, say, "Hi, Howard, how are you?" And I said, "Hi, John," and I could feel the grip in his hand, how strong he was and how powerful person he is. He was at the time, and I said to myself, someday he will be our president. And just to say, we had an excellent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, I appreciate your calling in. Now, can people get this movie online?
Yes, they can. They can get this movie at the JFK.
JFK Hyannis Museum.
You got it right there. There's an email I think right there you can do. Yeah, I haven't got it. Hold on, I got it in front of me. I get my own tape here.
But I see two websites here. One
is
Pearl River TV.
The website, let's see. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. www.jfkhyannismuseum.org.
Right. Okay.
Got it.
And the
tape is 1995.
Okay. Yep.
It's a really wonderful tape that somebody would want to purchase.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. I appreciated getting it. And I'll probably get back to Hyannis for some further things.
What station are you on?
What station?
We're live on a radio station? Or
you're on the internet.
Talking?
It's an internet radio station, yeah.
Internet radio.
Yeah, well, it's internet radio. You're on live, and it's archived. So anybody who wasn't listening like now can listen to it anytime they want.
Mm-hmm.
On a podcast, as they call it.
Internet live, you're saying?
Yeah, it's an internet, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So,
nice talking to you.
Sure.
You got my number on file. Anytime you want to give me a call, you're certainly welcome. And I'm so happy that you came into Hyannis and you went to a lovely restaurant. And I'm glad that you went to the museum and enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, that was the good part.
Great.
That was the good part. The bad part is who took us around.
What's that again?
The bad part was the person who took us around.
Oh, that didn't work out good?
What's his name? Glenn. Glenn Faria?
I don't see. Oakland, I'm not sure.
Oh, he's from the PR group that's in Hyannis. He's got a PR company in Hyannis.
Oh, okay. I really don't know.
That's okay. I'll talk
about
it.
Well, it's too bad. It's too bad you didn't know me. I would have taken a nice. I could have taken it around. Did you go up to the Hyannis Port Golf Club?
Uh huh. Well, the next time I come there, that's what I'm going to do. We're going to arrange, to have some of you local people take me around, so I really can.
You got a deal. Give me a call, and we'll take care of you.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank
you so much. Have a good evening.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Bye
now. Bye.
Okay. Well, as I'm waiting, for my next caller. I'm going to play. place. Tom, it's music time. Wait, something's going on with my, oh, I can't, come on, computer. Okay, I'm about to click on a song. Which is the one? Yeah, this is the song, song, well, Mark Massery. Oh, and before I do that, by the way, I'm plugging myself. I have a book I put out called Whirl with Merle. It's a humorous life. It's really funny, and you can get it on lulu.com. And we're going to talk further as it's getting out there. In the meantime, well, I was, I guess I was going to break, for a song. However, I want to get my next caller in because this is probably going to be a long talk. And if we don't finish it today, I'll have her on another time. I have Michelle Crystal is coming on. She's the executive director of In the Life TV. And we're going to talk about the LGBT community, how it's portrayed, and the chances against anti-gay groups that have tons of money. And we'll also talk about California Proposition 8. So, Michelle?
Hi, Merle. How are you?
Okay. A lousy day, huh?
It is. Yes.
All right. Well, what can you do?
Not, at least it's not too cold.
Nah.
How are you doing? Interesting show so far.
Yeah, this has been a hoot. this show is always a hoot.
Uh-huh.
Now, I what I'm going to do, by the way, because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. If we don't get to talk about it all on this show, I'm going to have you on another show because I want to really get all of this information out there. So the first topic we're going to get into is the discussion about with the anti-gay groups having tons of money and, you know, how that's affected the LGBT community.
Right, right.
So
just let me give your listeners a little bit of background about In the Life Media, who we are and what we do. In the Life Media is a nonprofit organization, and we produce the documentary series In the Life, which airs on public television stations across the country. And In the Life has been on the air for the past 17 years. We were the first LGBT series to be broadcast on television. And we like to think of ourselves as pioneers, that In the Life really paved the way for a lot of the progress that we've seen for the LGBT communities, and particularly the progress we've seen around representation of LGBT people in the media. And certainly over the past 40 years, which encompasses the modern LGBT rights movement. Many people say that the movement started in June 1969 at Stonewall with the Stonewall Rebellion. And this coming June, we're going to celebrate 40 years. And although the movement has made incredible progress in the last 40 years, and certainly in that time, particularly in the time that In the Life has been broadcast on public television, we've seen incredible progress in terms of representation. But what we are seeing is that our movement is, on the media front, is being consistently outspent by anti-gay forces. And the way that's affecting our community, a perfect example is what we saw a few weeks ago in California with No on Proposition 8. Just in case your listeners are not familiar, back in May, the California Supreme Court legalized the right for gay and lesbian couples to marry in California. And shortly after that, there was a proposed ballot amendment placed on the ballot for November, which read to eliminate the right of gay men and lesbians to marry in California. So what the No on 8 campaign was trying to do was get people to vote no, meaning no, the right would not be eliminated. Some people found the language to be confusing, but nonetheless, that was how it read. A vote of no was a vote against the elimination of the rights of gay men and lesbians to marry in California.
Right.
And over the course of the summer and increasingly throughout the fall, what we saw was a vast and well-resourced campaign for yes for Proposition 8, and it was largely funded and mobilized by groups, anti-gay groups, who have made it their mission to preach to people a message, an anti-gay and hateful message. And those groups, for example, Focus on the Family, spends $200 million a year on their various media products. And their media products include magazines and radio shows and websites. Christian Broadcasting Network has a similar budget to about $250 million. And what we saw out in California, and we've seen it across the country, it wasn't just California where we had these hateful initiatives. Gay men and lesbians were also denied rights in Arizona, Arkansas, and Florida. It is in large part because of the incredible resources that these organizations have and the power to mobilize their base through their media. I think the results that we saw in November speak to the fact that we are really out-resourced by so many of these groups. Just to put it in perspective, as I mentioned, Focus on the Family and Christian Broadcasting Network, their combined budgets are about $500 million. The combined budgets of national LGBT civil rights organizations is about $350 million. So those two organizations alone vastly exceed the resources of the entire LGBT movement. And what we saw in November with rights being denied across the country is symptomatic and indicative of the vast media power that these groups have.
Did you ever think about what exactly is the upset? What is the upset, do you think? It's so what if gay people get married, or so what if there are gay people, so what? I mean, what exactly is the upset?
I mean, I think for a lot of these people, it comes from a literal reading of the Bible, and I think for a great number of these people, it is, people always say that bigotry is a learned trait. Mm-hmm. It is not a trait that people are born with. This is something that people learn, and people learn it because of what they hear in their homes and what they hear in their churches and what they're hearing on these radio shows and television broadcasts that are across the country, and they are prolific, and they are insistent and consistent in their message that homosexuality is a sin. And so, if you can imagine that there are just unfortunately millions of people who are growing up in households and in communities where this is a message that they hear repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, this is
bad.
Okay, so people decide on what sins are okay and what sins are not. is that how it works? I mean, you can, you know, like, in other words, we can do gay bashing. That's
right.
Not a sin. I mean, like.
Right. I mean, there is very much, I think, there has been a real selective interpretation of some of these. For example, Leviticus is quoted. A number of people who say that homosexuality is a sin tend to quote Leviticus, and Leviticus says that a man shall not lie with another man, for that is an abomination. And you know, it sounds like pretty strong language until one looks at other places in Leviticus and realizes that it is also an abomination to wear cotton and silk together. Eating shellfish is an abomination.
I definitely have to send you a copy of this. This was during the time that they had the gay games in New York.
Uh-huh.
And somebody, I don't remember what it was. It was somebody who's got this little organization together, and his guy's big upset was, I don't want to have my son have to watch this on TV.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, my brain went, now, you have to understand, I'm a comedian. So there were things that, like, this sounded so absurd. Because what's the most logical thing? Turn the channel.
Exactly.
We have at least 100 channels. No one says you have to watch it. Okay. So I decided, no, this is so absurd, I'm going to have fun with it. And I had sent in letters to the editors, and I remember it went into, one went into Newsday, and one went into a local paper in Queens. And basically I was saying that, when I heard about that, I was looking into this, and I didn't realize that anal intercourse was going to be one of the competitive things in the games. I didn't know it was an Olympic event, and so I went into the Bible and I was looking at this, and I said, and I came across a thing about not eating, you're not supposed to eat a pig, you're not supposed to eat pork, you're not supposed to eat shellfish. And I went in on this whole entire thing of how they should take the food out of the schools. They want to teach it at home. It's their problem. They could do whatever they want at home. I did this whole thing, a whole takeoff with this entire thing, and I signed it Former Calamari Lover, you know. At the end of this, I said, so if so-and-so is really concerned about turning on the TV and seeing two people of the same sex holding hands, he should immediately switch it to some heterosexual violence instead. I'm a very logical person. And so what happens is I really, really, I mean, like, I have absolutely no understanding in what is the problem with homosexuality. I don't understand.
So you'll appreciate, I can't remember who said it, but you'll appreciate this. The comment was, if you're against gay marriage, don't marry a gay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, see, I was looking at I try to look at some of the other things. Like, I was trying to figure, like, and I did come to some conclusion regarding with the military, you know, mm-hmm. the ask, don't tell. And I thought to myself, men are more upset about having gay men in the military than women are having, you know, lesbians in the military. And I thought to myself, what's really the upset? And it occurred to me that the dominance, in other words, here are guys that have learned dominance over women. And now there's this possibility that somebody can dominate them, this possibility. And that's the threat. Why can't you just turn around and say, no, thank you? I mean, it's like if somebody's heterosexual, does it mean if a guy is heterosexual, does it mean he sleeps with every woman he meets? So, it's really, for me, it's funny because, like, I personally, I just, like, decided to make this choice. I said, you know, this doesn't work. I'm trying to deal with somebody of a different species. This is what my brain said. I'm trying to exist, and no matter what, I mean, like, you know, I'm seeing red and the person sees pink, and no matter how I communicate red, that person's seeing pink. So let's try to get, I need to live my life with somebody who understands. I said, so probably this is the, you know, it's a different species, so I think it's time to drop the Ben scene, you know? And totally logical. To me, it was totally logical. And there was absolutely nothing in my head that said, I'm doing something wrong. It just seemed very logical. Like, you know, making choices, you know.
Right.
And that was it.
Well, the notion of something as innate as love and desire, it can only come from an outside source. That somehow something so personal and so deep could possibly be wrong, and it's so damaging. We're working on our January show right now, and our feature segment is going to be about the ex-gay movement. Have you heard about this?
No.
There's an actual movement called the ex-gay movement, and
they're trying to cure.
They're trying to take gay people and make them straight. And the people who have gone through this program are so damaged by this process, by this what they are being fed and what they are being told. I mean, these are people who are religious and spiritual, and they have a connection to their church, and they're being told by their churches that as a gay person they don't have a place in the church, and they are trying to change, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes under duress, particularly minors being sent to these ex-gay camps by their parents, and we talked to some of these people, and the havoc that has been wreaked in their lives and the damage to their psyches is heart-wrenching. It is absolutely heart-wrenching. And these people, they want to change. They, you know, for some of them, they go into it believing that they can change, and they want to change because they want to be good Christians, and they try, and invariably they fail, and the stories of the survivors are absolutely heartbreaking. And of course there are stories of a great number of people who don't survive, usually because they commit suicide, or you know, overdose or some.
Right.
But a tremendous number of people don't survive these so-called ex-gay ministries. But the ones who do have gathered together and they're trying to come to terms with their experiences and provide support groups for each other to talk about these experiences. But it is not only a belief that that homosexuality is wrong or a sin, which, you know, of course we're all entitled to our beliefs, but these people are acting on those beliefs in a way that is damaging to gay men and lesbians, in a way in which we have seen repeatedly, not just in California, but over the last several years, we have seen so many states adopt these so-called defensive marriage acts, denying basic civil rights to gay people. I think if it was just a belief, a personal belief that these people kept to their person, that would be one thing. But this is a personal belief that people are imposing upon a great number of people at considerable emotional expense, and also towards the end of denial of basic civil rights. Do you know the LGBT community is the only group in this country that has ever had its civil rights put to a vote?
Really?
I mean, can you imagine if any other group,
right?
They put it out to the popular vote. You know, should these people get their rights? It's mind-boggling.
Oh, of course. There was a couple of things that, by the way, I'm a member of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association. So,
terrific organization, yeah. Yes.
And so, for people who want to get what this is about, it's about, you know, making sure that the journalism is correct or proper or whatever. Not policing it like GLAAD. Is GLAAD yet GLAAD?
Right.
But just, you know, taking responsibility. So I have like some, you know, gay publications that I write for. Yeah. You know, and so if there's anything, although I usually don't write anything controversial unless I'm making fun of something as a comedian, you know. But I had noticed like watching TV. Did you see the last of Boston Legal?
No, not it.
It's the last episode of Boston Legal. I don't know if you've ever followed it.
No, I haven't. The series is ending.
Yes, the series is ending, and the two leads, the two guys that are the leads, they always, it's a camaraderie thing, and they're both lawyers. One of them, who is William Shatner, plays one of them, and they always like they're best of friends, and at the end of each episode, they get together on the terrace and they have a drink and smoke a cigar, and they talk, and they're always talking about they love each other, you know, whatever, and they decided they were the character William Shatner plays, he's getting Alzheimer's, and he decides he doesn't want to be alone, and he asks the other guy to marry him.
Uh-huh.
And they go to Canada, and they want to get married, and they go to Canada. I don't know why they don't do it in Massachusetts, because that's where they are, but they go to Canada to get married. And the issue that came up, because there became like a court issue of a gay lawyer saying this is atrocious because, you know, you're we had to fight for our rights to get married, and you're, you know, two heterosexual guys, and you're doing this kind of thing. But so they did wind up getting married, you know, because they just talked about their thing was, which is interesting. People get married for different reasons in heterosexual couples. They could be getting married for money, for companionship, for things like that. That really has nothing to do with, you know, happy life and sex and that kind of a thing. But I thought that was interesting that they presented that. But then on the other side, now I don't know if you watch Bravo TV, and they have Top Chef.
Right, right.
Have you been watching this particular series?
I have not watched this season, no.
All right, so in this Top Chef, it's only been maybe 3-4 weeks or something like that. And we get there are three gay people competing, two men, one woman. And interestingly enough, I mean, as I said, it's not even many weeks already went by, and the two gay guys are suddenly like the worst. And it's like, I see. Isn't that interesting? So now the lesbian is left.
The worst cow.
Huh?
The worst chef?
In terms of, yes.
Uh-huh.
They made the biggest mistakes, or et cetera, et cetera. They, you know, they're the ones that get pulled off. And I thought, oh, how interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now let's see how, let's follow the lesbian. Now suddenly she's and like comes up in the bottom third of something, bottom three, of course, because of what she made, and they're saying because her duck egg wasn't fully cooked. Now, and you saw some white, you know, and how could you do that, and you present that, and I'm thinking to myself, but people eat raw meat. There's always showing somebody who's presenting sushi, that's raw. People eat things that have raw eggs in it, so it's not that big of a deal. It's not... The thing that she made itself, she put like a duck egg on top of something. And I said, are they doing this again? Are they looking to get rid of her? But the thing that really killed me, because there's a guy on there, this chef that's on there, some guy from France or something, who's giving her presents.
What kind of presents?
It's just like give her like a stuffed animal or stuff like that. They're making this big deal of a straight man that's, you know, that's flirting with her, even though she's saying, doesn't he get I'm a lesbian? And I'm thinking, this has got to be, I mean, it's staged. You're seeing whatever they choose for you to see.
Of course.
And I'm thinking, this is, you know, what the hell is going on here? Again, this is, you know, anti-gay,
mm-hmm.
again. But so this is more of what they, you know, what they show on TV that's negative.
Well,
and, of course, they have the lesbians got, you know, tattoos all over her body. They, of course. They have to have, you know.
Well, a lot of people do these days.
Yeah, but, you know, they made sure. I mean, it's interesting of who they choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I mean. But anyway, well, and I have like just 2 minutes left. Well, I would like to, of course, have you back to talk about some more issues and continue this. I'm going to get it. I'll get in touch with you. And this is great. I really appreciate you calling in and talking about this. And by all means, like, you email me if you have something else that you even want to chat about on the
Terrific.
On the internet.
Okay.
I'm quite open to having you tell us. Like, I can have you talk about what's going on in the gay world or something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Alrighty. I'll be your LGBT correspondent.
Okay, that's a all great right. idea.
All right.
Have a great
Take
evening.
Take care. Have
Thanks
a good evening,
a lot, Michelle.
Bye bye.
Right, bye bye. Yes, you know, my phone is about to die on me. But anyway, so, well, everybody, next week I'll be coming back from Salem, Massachusetts, and we'll talk about the witch. in here. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone. I know you're the host of the show. I understand.